Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at the San Diego Performance Academy. This week is Sunshine Week, shining a light on open government, or in this case, the lack of it. Now, here in San Diego, there's been a lot of controversy lately over public officials who've been seeking to delete emails, or in some cases, hide emails in private accounts, as well as groups doing city business that have refused to disclose their records. So now San Diego Council members Marty Emerald and David Alvarez, along with Californians Aware, a group dedicated to open government, are proposing open government guarantees be added to the city charter, the first known such action in the entire state. Emerald and Alvarez are asking the council to put the measure on the November ballot so that voters can approve it. Now, initially, this was proposed back in February by Alvarez and CalAware's new president, Donna Fry, a former council member herself, and they called for public access to records of city contractors. It also required that any withholding of public records that is not mandated by state or federal laws be authorized as an exemption from the California Public Records Act and also justified by substantial evidence of necessity to protect the public interest. You can't withhold it just because you want to. That version was unanimously forwarded to the council by a policy committee, but the council voted to send it back to committee after City Attorney Jan Goldsmith said the charter change might invite litigation. Since then, more controversial developments have led the authors to broaden the proposal to cover even more. The collapse of efforts by a nonprofit committee charged with organizing a centennial celebration for historic Balboa Park drew outrage after the committee's officials insisted that their records were not subject to the Public Records Act. Now, although a wave of public criticism eventually prompted them to relent and provide all those records to the city, this issue led to an addition in the proposal that will make records of any work done for the city by contractors or anybody else subject to access by city officials and the public. Interim Mayor Todd Gloria unexpectedly announced that all emails over 1 year old would soon be destroyed, drawing criticism from open government advocates. Now, although the new mayor, Kevin Falconer, canceled that order, this led to the addition of yet another new provision requiring preservation of all city records for at least 2 years, which is the same requirement that the state maintains for its records. In addition, the proposal would require that the email records of any communication regarding city business by municipal employees, elected officials, or agents must be filed or copied to city servers. That comes in response to the practice of using private email accounts for official processes, with some officials seeking to dodge public disclosure requirements. And that, incidentally, is an issue we've seen with some of our East County boards and commissions as well. The result is, in San Diego, is perhaps the strictest attempt known yet to use local rules to open up government to public scrutiny. And if voters approve this measure, no elected officials in the future will be able to subvert the public's right to access public records in the city of San Diego. CalAware General Counsel Terry Frank concludes, if you don't want the paper trail of public accountability to vanish in a year, or stay hidden in the private files of a city contractor, or be channeled out of sight in officials' private emails, you need charter language that says so and can't be changed at the whim of the next city council that doesn't like the sunshine.
This is Leon Thompson with East County Magazine on KNSJ Radio from Descanso. And today we're talking with Marilyn Lyons, who is an independent insurance broker and a certified Covered California agent. Welcome to the show, Marilyn.
Thank you very much, and thank you for having me here.
As I understand it, we're coming up on a deadline for Covered California.
Yes, that's very true. Covered California has done very well in its enrollment figures. 1 million people have now signed up on the website. They have completed the application and are enrolled for healthcare coverage, which is wonderful, and we're very pleased about that. But we know that there's also a vast number of people that have not enrolled, and the deadline is rapidly approaching, and we are encouraging them to quickly find an agent that is close to them or Look on the website for agents under Find Help Near You and seek to get covered. People who have not signed up by March 31st, 2014 will ultimately receive a penalty when they pay taxes, and that would be in 2015. And again, that's a substantial penalty for many people who do qualify for Covered California and for the reduced rates in healthcare coverage that it offers.
What is that penalty?
Well, if for 2014, actually, the penalty is 1%, and that's the percentage of family income above the filing threshold. So that would be 1% of their income in 2014, $95 for an adult or whatever is higher. So what I mean by above the tax filing threshold is it is $95 per adult or 1% of their income, whichever is higher. And that also includes a penalty of $47.50 per child, which can reach up to $285 for a family.
Well, that's a pretty substantial penalty for a family, and that's for not having insurance at all. Do I understand that correctly?
Well, actually, that's a very good question. That's for not having coverage that is either purchased through the Covered California Exchange or that meets the requirements of the ACA Act. And as you know, the Affordable Care Act brought many benefits to the community. It increased the benefits in the health care plans that are now currently available, such as it added preventative measures and preventative care to those health plans. And that was an increase in coverage. And it required the insurance companies to pay out 80% in benefits to the client. So the cost to the insurance companies, we know that 80% of those costs are paid out in patient care. And that was another benefit that the Affordable Care Act brought to us as citizens and taxpayers, and it's those are great benefits. That was a great expansion of coverage that was provided through the Affordable Care Act.
And there's been other benefits too. For instance, pre-existing conditions.
Correct.
You can't be denied for having acne when you were a teenager later on in life, or even something serious like a heart attack or something like that. You can't be denied. Is that right?
That's very correct.
And then your kids, they're on your plan until you're 26 years old, right?
That's right. Yes, you can keep your children on the family plans until 26. But let me backtrack to your statement about pre-existing conditions. Absolutely, that's such a critical issue that you have raised, Leon. The pre-existing conditions, I as a broker for 2 years working with clients know that many people sought to be covered, and I had to sadly turn them away. There was just no way that any of our carriers would take them with a 10-foot pole. And sometimes those conditions weren't so surprising, you know, cardiovascular issues. Worst case scenario would be some type of cancer or potential cancer, some type of tumor. But many times they were turned away for much less serious conditions, and or they were accepted but rated up so that their insurance was just not affordable to them. Many times I had a client who just had a very minor case of cholesterol, and the carrier rated that client up to such a degree that she had to ultimately cancel her insurance just for cholesterol. The irony of the thing was that after she accepted the plan and was enrolled, she went back to her doctor, and her doctor said, no, I think you can manage this simply by lifestyle rather than by any medications. So it just goes to show you that the system had problems that needed to be addressed. And I think that's the wonderful thing about the Affordable Care Act, is that it's addressing many of those issues that needed to be addressed and to help clients get coverage.
There's another issue. We're talking about Medi-Cal. What is Medi-Cal?
Well, Medi-Cal offers free or low-cost health coverage for residents who are in California and who meet the eligibility requirements. And what are the eligibility requirements? Well, again, if you make less than approximately $16,000 annually, you qualify for Medi-Cal. Now, there are some other reviews that are required by the state of California, but essentially, if that's your adjusted gross income, slightly less than $16,000, then you will qualify for Medi-Cal.
Is that for a single person, or is that for...
That is for a single person, yes.
Mm-hmm. Is there a deadline to enroll in Medi-Cal?
Well, actually, there is not. Medi-Cal, you can enroll throughout the entire year, okay. But it is very advisable at this time because we are coming to the end of those that will qualify for Covered California, which is, again, those are plans that are provided by Covered California for people that do not meet the income requirements of Medi-Cal so that they purchase a plan and they can receive premium assistance and tax credits. This premium assistance is a form of tax credit to them. Mm-hmm. And so, again, people that qualify for Medi-Cal actually can apply throughout the entire year, but that deadline is rapidly approaching to be reviewed for your eligibility. And so I would suggest that if you think you qualify for Medi-Cal, that you try very hard to meet the deadline, which is rapidly approaching March 31st, 2014, to be reviewed. Because many people that I have dealt with feel that they qualify for Medi-Cal, and when we actually look at the figures, they do not.
Speaking as an applicant, okay, let's say it looks like Covered California found me eligible for tax credits, but my children are listed for Medi-Cal instead. Why is this?
There may be a number of reasons. The first reason may be that the children are listed for Medi-Cal because the parents are not here lawfully. They're not lawful residents, and therefore they do not qualify to be covered for some reason. And the children are qualified because perhaps they were born here in the United States, and therefore they are citizens of the United States, and they do qualify for Medi-Cal because the parents' income is within the guidelines. Those would be a couple of reasons. It could be immigration, or it could be the income issues.
Will I be able to get good quality health care through Medi-Cal?
Absolutely. Oh, the quality of health care in Medi-Cal is just, you know, astounding, I believe. So it's similar to the benefits that would be offered on the plans in Covered California. So should a person not qualify for a Covered California plan, they should not have any hesitation at accepting a Medi-Cal plan. It's just a zero cost. In most cases, it's a complete, there is no charge for the Medi-Cal plan. So, Here's an example of some statistics. A recent survey of Medi-Cal members by the California Healthcare Foundation found that 90% of the members who answered the survey rated Medi-Cal as good or very good for their healthcare coverage. You know, Medi-Cal emphasizes prevention, and that's what I'm about. You know, in terms of a health policy advocate, I'm certainly about prevention, and I think that's one of the wonderful things about the ACA, the Affordable Care Act, known as Obamacare, or in the state of California, the Covered California Access. And the thing about the Affordable Care Act is that it provides for preventative care. Those visits to your doctor for preventative care will be at zero cost. And so, again, it helps our communities and our nation to stay healthy.
What health plans are available through Medi-Cal? Are they government plans?
Not at all. Again, many people have made accusations that Covered California is a socialized medicine, and I think nothing could be further from the truth. There are many competitive plans on the exchange. In fact, those carriers are competing for business. And the same is true with Medi-Cal. Medi-Cal offers 21 managed care health plans. And many of these are also offered by the Covered California website for people who qualify for healthcare plans. So your choices depend on which county you live in And many counties offer commercial plans, including Anthem Blue Cross, Kaiser, HealthNet, Molina, just to name a few. And these are all on the Covered California website for people who qualify for subsidized plans as well.
KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice.
This is Leon Thompson, and we're back with Marilyn Lyons, who's a licensed independent insurance broker and certified agent with Covered California. How much does Medi-Cal cost?
Again, for many people who enroll in Medi-Cal, there are no premiums. There's no copayment, and there is no out-of-pocket cost. These are people that really, really cannot afford any kind of payment for their health care. And there may be some very small charges for individuals who have just, they're slightly compromised in their income, but they really can't afford to buy a health care plan, an insurance plan for their health.
So there is a subsidy.
Yes, of course. There are subsidies available. And for some Medi-Cal kids, the premium is about $13 per child. And those are for families that can't afford it. And then individuals in Medi-Cal get the same health benefits, again, that's offered through Covered California, but just at a lower cost.
$13, that's affordable.
Oh, it's a wonderful opportunity.
Can I stay with my doctor? I hear that many doctors don't accept Medi-Cal.
Mm-hmm. Well, yes and no. There are more than 400 hospitals and about 130,000 doctors, pharmacies, dentists, and other healthcare providers that do accept Medi-Cal. And all of those hospitals and most of those providers are also in the Covered California network. So many Medi-Cal members have testified that it is very easy to find a primary care doctor using the Medi-Cal plans.
I have questions about medications, accessing doctors, and specialists. So who do I call?
If you have questions about your coverage under the Medi-Cal managed care plan, you can call your health plan's customer service line just like you would for any other health coverage plan. It isn't managed by the government. You're going to call your individual health care plan.
Oh, I see. So my children are eligible for Medi-Cal, but I am eligible for Covered California. So how do we both get enrolled?
Okay. If you are in a household in which some members qualify for Medi-Cal and others qualify for Covered California, you only need to complete one application. And that could be the online application, or if for any reason the website is not functional, you can submit a paper application. And I would suggest using an agent who can guide you through the process and who is knowledgeable about the types of plans that are available. And they can give you recommendations on plans. But you would enter all of your family members on the application, and then when your eligibility is determined, you'll notice which family members qualify for the Covered California plan and which qualify for Medi-Cal. You can pick a healthcare plan for each individual that qualifies for Medi-Cal and for Covered California, and that information for the Medi-Cal recipients is sent out to them. It's mailed out to them.
Okay, well, that raises a question. Let's say my children are eligible for Medi-Cal, but I'm eligible for Covered California. Can we see the same doctor?
That answer really depends on the network that's available. In some cases, it's true. You can see the same doctor if those doctors also affiliate with Covered California. In other cases, they may not be a part of that network, and therefore the answer would be no.
So what percentage of the doctors would be yes?
Approximately four plans are on the Covered California website, and I think I've mentioned those carriers. And the doctors that affiliate with that also are doctors that generally affiliate with Medi-Cal as well.
That sounds like a large percentage.
Yes, it is. There are about approximately eight carriers for each plan, so it's about half.
So can I decline Medi-Cal and enroll in a Covered California plan and receive the federal premium assistance?
No, you cannot. Your income and your tax status determines whether or not you qualify for Medi-Cal. So again, if you're filing taxes and you make less than approximately $16,000, then you would qualify for Medi-Cal, and you cannot elect to choose a covered California plan and pay a certain amount more because you simply don't qualify. So again, there would be no reason not to accept the Medi-Cal plan, which does share common doctors with the covered California plans on the website. And that would be the advisable thing to do, to accept the Medi-Cal plan and then look for common doctors. If you, in your family, look for doctors that accept both plans if you have a mixed family.
If my Medi-Cal coverage is canceled because my income has increased, do I qualify for special enrollment in Covered California?
Yes. If you're losing coverage, like Medi-Cal, then you have what we call a special enrollment period. So you're eligible. You have an eligibility period. And this also happens with other types of qualifying events. And this is very important to know, because this is true not only in the Medi-Cal world, but also in the Medicare world. If you have a loss of a job, a marriage or divorce, the birth of a child, and these are types of things in the insurance field, I should really say, that qualify you for special enrollment periods to be able to choose a health plan and, you know, initiate a new application for health insurance. So again, to rephrase all of this, when you have a qualifying event, a life qualifying event, such as the loss of a job, marriage, divorce, birth of a child, loss of your coverage goes out of play, out of business, your carrier goes out of business, and then the plan is no longer available to you. This opens a special enrollment period, and you are able to apply once again for coverage.
So I previously applied for Medi-Cal, but was denied because of my property, such as a car that I own, that I drive to work. Can I qualify?
Yes. One thing that the Affordable Care Act did was it made it easier to qualify for Medi-Cal, so that prior to the ACA enactment or healthcare reform, it was more difficult to qualify for Medi-Cal if you owned an automobile and other property. Now, property like cars are not counted against you. So you should apply through the Covered California website to see if you qualify.
So if I sign up for Medi-Cal, what's going to happen to my assets?
Okay, Medi-Cal does not place any claims against your assets for any kind of health care expenses that you incur. So even if these expenses are incurred by your children or any adult under age 55, okay, so they could be, let's say, an older individual that maybe has disability prior to qualifying for Medicare, may have been placed in a nursing home or extended care facility. Again, these kinds of things are not going to be held against you, okay?
Yes. I have another question. My child and I enrolled in Medi-Cal in December of 2013. So how do we receive confirmation from the county that we can access services in January 2014?
This just goes to the number of applications that have been submitted. There's been such a significant number of Medi-Cal applications that have been received through the Covered California website that they are providing temporary Medi-Cal coverage. That's called presumptive eligibility. And they continue to work through those applications to try to verify that all of the information is correct. But during that period of time, they are reviewing various items such as state residency, citizenship, immigration status. So if your application is pending due to missed information, likely you will receive some kind of contact from the offices of Medi-Cal, and you know that you do have temporary coverage during that period of time.
And how do I get this presumptive eligibility?
It's simply by applying. Through the application process, you receive that presumptive eligibility until they can confirm that there is, for some reason, that you may not qualify.
Now, I received my blue and white BIC card, the BIC card, mm-hmm. in the mail, but there was no additional information with it. Does this mean that I have Medi-Cal? And how do I enroll in a health plan?
Since you received your Medi-Cal card, your benefits identification card, and that's what he meant by saying BIC card, it's your Medi-Cal benefits identification card. Your coverage dates back to January 1st, 2014. So you do have temporary coverage during that time. And you can get healthcare benefits from an enrolled Medi-Cal provider. You do need to check out and make sure that they are an enrolled Medi-Cal provider. But once you have done that, you certainly can receive benefits.
Thank you, Marilyn. This has been very enlightening, and we certainly appreciate your insight. Leon Thompson with East County Magazine. We've been talking with Marilyn Lyons, and she is an independent insurance broker and certified with Covered California. And again, how do we reach you if we wish to ask some more questions?
Well, first I want to say thank you, Leon, for having me here today, and it's been my pleasure to come and talk about Covered California and the Insurance Exchange, coveredcalifornia.com. That's a wonderful way to reach me. You just go ahead and go to coveredcalifornia.com and look for Find Help Near You. You just select that tab and you can look for me, Marilyn Lyons, under that tab. And my zip code is 92130. And you may also phone me at 858-205-9799. And I'll be glad to answer any questions you may have about Covered California or help you to apply. There is no fee. It is completely my contribution to help people get covered with Covered California and to have health insurance.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome, and it was a pleasure to be with you today.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso.
Recording at the San Diego Performance Academy.
We're going to be talking about a very serious problem out in the Steel Canyon area where there's been a number of bad accidents through the years, several fatalities and serious injury accidents on Steel Canyon Road and or Highway 94 near the high school. The most recent, just last week, there were two bad accidents out there. One of them killed a 16-year-old Steel Canyon High School student,
Julian Frere,
who was on his way to school when he went over the center line and struck another vehicle head-on. Terrible, terrible tragedy. And I'm here today with Raina Menashe. Some of you know her as our bookshelf host, but Raina is also the parent of a student at Steel Canyon High, and she's been raising some serious concerns for a while about the traffic out there. Raina, thank you for joining us today.
Oh, you're welcome, Miriam.
Tell us what the traffic is like out there in the morning on the way to school.
Well, it's a difficult commute to school because this road is narrow, it's two lanes, it's twisty, and there's a lot of traffic coming out of Humul, I guess, to the 94 to go to work, and then you have all the people commuting to the school. And so what happens is the turn lanes into the school, you have to cross double lines to sit in the lanes, there's not enough room. The traffic is difficult, the pressure is there, there are a lot of people driving badly. I've just been afraid of the commute since my son, who's in 10th grade, since he started last year.
Is he driving now?
No, no. He's still 15. But every morning, it feels like it's out of control.
How long are the waits? I know you mentioned there's one light where the wait can be very long.
Well, sometimes you could be out there 15 or 20 minutes.
20 minutes.
Mm-hmm. It depends. It varies a great deal, but I've tried it from both directions. And you can just stop. And because if a child is late, they get some form of detention.
Detention.
Lateness is not an excuse.
So you can have been a perfectly good student, and if you're late because of a 20-minute delay out on that road or more, then you get detention?
Yes. I guess there are too many people arriving late. And, you know, they do ask you to plan it and try to come earlier, but I've played with the different times. And there's only so much you can do because you can't predict it.
Yeah, so if you as an adult can't figure this out, how is a brand new 16-year-old driver supposed to handle that situation? Are you seeing some dangerous driving by some of these teenagers out there in their haste to get to school and not be detained?
I don't know. I don't always look in the car, so I don't know if it's the teenagers or the parents, but there's a lot of impatient driving. There's a lot of, as I said, you have to cross into an illegal spot to wait in the line to turn. Mm-hmm. So you have a choice of either cutting someone off, which causes near accidents, or you sit in the waiting to turn in a place that you're not legally allowed to turn.
So there's sort of an incentive for people to maybe take risks to get to school.
Right. So I've seen a lot of near accidents, let's put it that way.
When did you bring this to the attention of school officials, and what did you say?
Well, I'm sure that many parents have brought it up to the administrators. I brought it up to one administrator and said that...
When?
It was in the fall.
So long before this occurred.
And I said that we were having trouble getting to school on time and that the driving was crazy and kind of scary and that what can they do something? I don't know what. And he said that he understood. He knew that it was a bad situation, that he had to drive in it as well, and that they didn't have a solution.
That's frightening.
But on their side, they do have a list that you can sign up for a carpool, which is sometimes possible if someone lives nearby or if your kids come home at the same time.
Are there school buses?
As far as I know, there are no school buses. There may be for certain people, but there are not any available.
So maybe that would be a possible option if the funding could be found so that there would be fewer cars on the road if people could take buses to school. Do you think that would help?
I'm not sure what would help. When I was a kid, we had school buses. I'm sure it would cut down the number of cars. My main concern is I realize the school, once you get on the property, they're trying. They have people out there. They have cones.
Yeah.
But getting to school is dangerous.
Yeah, so and Highway 94, of course, is under the jurisdiction of Caltrans, and there's Steel Canyon Road, which I believe is a county-controlled road. Have you reached out to any of these officials, or do you know if the school has?
I don't know. I do know they're going to be building a casino there.
Yeah, let's talk about that. There's been a lot of concern about Highway 94 in particular, which is already one of the most dangerous roads in our region. There's been many, many, many head-on crashes, fatalities, not all of them related to the school, of course, on that road. And now there's two big projects slated to go in. One of them is the casino now under construction for the Hamul Indians. The other is the border crossing. There's a new border crossing being built at the end of Highway 94 out there. And of all things, it's to accommodate oversized loads. Apparently, the San Ysidro crossing and the Tecate crossing cannot accommodate these. And so now, on top of everything else, you're going to see overwide, oversized, enormous loads going down that highway that would further slow it. And then whatever traffic, of course, the casino brings in, and there's certainly concerns there that you could have alcohol involved as well with people drinking. So as background, there are two lawsuits that have been filed against Caltrans that have been filed over the casino approvals by the County of San Diego and by an anti-casino group in Hamul. And they're contending that Caltrans did not do enough to require straightening, mitigation, whatever, on the roadway. The tribe has been required actually to spend a lot of money on roadway improvements, but a lot of people feel that it just simply isn't enough, particularly with these other serious issues we already have with the school and now a new border crossing coming in. Right. So, Raina, what do you think should be done?
Well, it is a lovely area that I understand it, what I was told was that they were advised not to build a school there in the first place.
That's true.
It's an area that's difficult to reach. But what we have right now is a situation that I think just needs to be discussed at the very least. I think we should have some kind of public meeting where you have experts, you have engineers and county officials and people who know the pros and cons of different options, like if the turn light could be longer, if there could be a police officer stationed there, if there could be buses, you know, so school officials, county officials, parents, and hear the options and the pros and the cons and to know what they...
And maybe even something is, in addition to those solutions, maybe something as simple as the school relaxing the rules a little bit on detention. Maybe you don't get detention automatically the first time a student is late because of traffic. Maybe you get a warning the first time or something more minor the second time. Because isn't it more important to keep these kids alive than, you know, than to be that rigid about the enforcement, recognizing, of course, that you don't want them wandering in late all of the time.
And I do understand that. I mean, I teach, not kids, but I do teach. So I understand the lateness. On the other hand, it's
out of
it's undoable. Yeah. So I'm not, I mean, you can arrive an hour early, I suppose, and miss the traffic, but it's not realistic for people who are balancing, you know, a lot of balls in the air. So I think if the school would discuss that as one of the options to at least reduce some pressure, and then what we can do about that street and that turn light. And if we're going to be having oversized vehicles and other traffic there, I honestly can't imagine it.
Well, I want to thank you very much, Raina, for joining us today on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ, and we will be definitely staying on top of this issue, and I would certainly reach out and invite any of the school officials, anybody from Caltrans, the tribe, the county, to come on the show. Let's talk about the issues, and if there is a public meeting, we certainly are going to be covering them. And if you're a parent out there or anybody else with ideas about how this situation could be improved, then we would like to hear from you as well.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
This is Leon Thompson with some news about a program that is helping to provide transportation to seniors and disabled people in rural East County. Raul was blind for 4 years due to diabetes. He lives alone and couldn't leave his house, walk to the store, or do daily tasks. Last winter, he was very cold because he couldn't see well enough to make a warm fire. With the help of Mountain Health's Senior Transportation Program, Raul has been able to get to and from his doctor's appointments, including surgery for his eyes, and pick up his eye drops and diabetes medication. Today, Raul can see 70% better in his right eye after having multiple surgeries. He recently underwent surgery on his left eye that resulted in seeing shadows and light, thanks to a special program through Mountain Health to help seniors in rural East County. Raul has voiced thanks for the program and calls the results of his surgeries a miracle. He has a better outlook on life and states with a huge smile on his face, "My future is looking brighter now that I can see my grandkids," he says. Mountain Health operates 4 federally qualified community health centers throughout San Diego County, including centers in Alpine and Campo here in East County, with a new and expanded Campo clinic planned soon. Mountain Health has been serving the seniors in Mountain Empire and Alpine for many years. With a grant from the San Diego Association of Governments, or SANDAG, Mountain Health offers a senior and disabled transportation program. The senior transportation program is funded by the county's Transnet sales tax. Transportation has always been an issue in the backcountry with limited bus service and no taxi service. Many seniors find it difficult to access basic services such as medical visits, picking up prescriptions, and purchasing groceries. It is difficult at times for seniors to get down the hill because of rising gas costs and the lack of public transportation in the area. Some of these seniors haven't seen a doctor for 4 or 5 years. Through the program, the seniors have also been able to sign up for Social Security benefits that they should have been paid for several years. This has become a valuable service that we can offer to our local seniors and persons with disability, commented Julie Atherton, Senior Resource Coordinator at the Mountain Empire Community Center. The program relies on volunteers who have provided hours of service transporting seniors in the backcountry. These volunteer drivers are finding the experience as valuable for them as for the seniors that they are transporting. Many volunteers have said that the rewards come from the smiles that they bring to their passengers and knowing how important the service is that they are providing. Drivers are required to pass a background check, a basic physical, drug screen, and a TB test. These are paid for by Mountain Health with no cost to the volunteer. Volunteers are also required to have a current driver's license, registration, and vehicle insurance with the DMV printout. Volunteers are then matched with seniors and disabled persons to help them access essential services and other resources, including medical, social services, and shopping. There is a reimbursement for each volunteer's mileage through the SANDAG grant. This program is available to older adults aged 60 or older who are living in their own homes and also to qualified adults who are disabled of all ages. If you are interested in signing up as a volunteer driver, donating, or if you know a senior or disabled person who needs these services, you can contact Julie Atherton at the Mountain Empire Community Center at 619-478-2384 or at the website jatherton at mountainhealth, that's mtnhealth.org. Mountain Health knows the importance in keeping seniors in their homes longer and living a healthy, independent life. We want to reach out to our communities and let them know that we care and can help, Ms. Atherton concluded.
The world-famous Harlem Globetrotters have entertained millions of fans in 122 countries over the past 88 years. Now the team, famed for its comedy basketball routines, is bringing fun summer basketball clinics to kids in San Diego and East County. The Harlem Globetrotters are teaming up with 24-Hour Fitness in the Santee, College Grove, and Balboa areas for clinics coached by Globetrotter star players. The two-hour clinics will be offered mornings and afternoons during late June at each of these locations. Globetrotter star Dizzy Grant says, quote, "It doesn't matter what skill level you are, every kid will have a blast at our summer clinics." The clinics not only teach basketball skills, but also how to be a good teammate, both on and off the court. Plus, kids get photos and an autograph session with Globetrotters players. Clinics are open to boys and girls of all skill levels, ages 6 to 12. For more information and to find the clinic nearest you, visit www.harlemglobetrotters.com/clinics. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Ed Barrena.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today I'm interviewing J. Dillon Yates, author of The Belief in Angels and Saja's Story, which won the Alexis Masters Scholarship Award at the February 2012 San Francisco Writers Conference and will be published in April 2004 by She Writes Press. In addition to writing, my guest has worked as a teacher, nurse, and court-appointed special advocate, CASA volunteer, with Voices for Children. She volunteers with the Girls Rising program in San Diego as well. Welcome, Dillon. It's a pleasure having you on Bookshelf.
Thank you so much, Raina. It's a pleasure to be here.
Let's begin with your novel, The Belief in Angels. I understand it took decades to write, mm-hmm. and the book also takes place in different places and decades. Massachusetts in the 1960s, 70s, and Russian-occupied Ukraine in the 1920s. Tell us about your inspiration for the book and what ties it all together?
Well, both Jules, who's the quirky young primary narrator in The Belief in Angels, and her grandfather, Saja, who's a Holocaust survivor, suffer terrible tragedies. And they both learn to adapt and survive and ultimately thrive by developing the same dissociative abilities that allow them to kind of check out of their respective situations for a while. And while Saja, whose name is later Americanized to Samuel, he goes inward and for a time becomes quite bitter and isolated by his experience, Jules reacts to her tragedy by developing a very dark sense of humor that absolutely buoys her through tough times and provides a perspective that allows her to distance herself in healthy ways from the chaos of her childhood.
So it's about coping with tragedy and also about, I'm hearing you say that dissociating, which is typically considered unhealthy, being used in a healthy fashion.
Absolutely. Both characters ultimately find hope and happiness.
And I know that you're writing another novel, Saja's Story, which is going to feature the same characters. Is that correct?
The second book is Saja's Story, and it's kind of a prequel. And it was carved from the first because originally the book had more characters than War and Peace.
Uh-oh.
And it follows his life before he settles in America. It traces his early years growing up on a Ukrainian farm through the pogroms and the work camps in Cyprus, his imprisonment at the Majdanek death camp, and his survival of the meth cure torpedoing. Mm-hmm. And then finally, his experiences working in the post-war Parisian couture house of Lucien Lelong, who was an actual historic figure.
So is this based on personal history or is this all fiction?
My own grandfather never spoke about his childhood. There was a photo of his family that hung in a dark entry hallway in his apartment, and the photo showed 11 siblings.
Wow.
But only four of them came to America from the Ukraine in the early 1920s. Mm-hmm. When I asked him what happened to the rest of his brothers and sisters and to his parents, he refused to tell me. Evidently, it was so painful that he didn't speak about it to anyone, or he felt it wasn't a conversation you could have with any member of his family, never mind a little girl.
Right.
He told me not to ask questions. So as a result, sadly, I never heard his story. A large piece of what drove me to invent Saja's story in the book is a need to create my own history out of the secrets that my own family mm-hmm. kept.
Well, it sounds like he coped with it his own way, which was by not addressing it all, and you're doing the opposite.
I'm trying to do the opposite. That's exactly right.
You're also in the process of completing another novel called Taste, which will be published under another name. I know that it's the first of a series, and it's some sort of coming out, coming of age story set in 1970s Greenwich Village. What about that series? Give us a teaser. Is
teaser?
It a similar topic, very different?
Completely different topic, completely different genre, completely different audience. It's erotic lesbian fiction.
Okay.
So that's why, you know, everything that I've learned about publishing so far is that you develop a platform. So this will be written under a different name. It'll have a different audience. And teaser, well, the working title for the book is 50 Shades of Gay.
Oh, I love it. So what's coming out first? Will it be the Saja's story? Or?
First is The Belief in Angels.
Okay. And that's coming out very soon. That's coming out in spring.
Yes.
And then will be Saja's story and then the other one.
Yes.
Okay. Let's talk about you more personally. I know that you have a fascinating background. You've spent time working as an RN with midwives. And I read that you've compared the process of nursing to the process of writing a novel.
Absolutely.
What about that analogy?
Absolutely. It was a much longer gestational period for the book than it was for a 9-month pregnancy. That was something I didn't know about publishing when I went into it as well, that it's a years-long process. Had mm-hmm. I known, I may not have survived. I may not have plunged in. But yes, giving birth soon.
And
very similar.
Do you still teach?
I don't still teach, but I really did enjoy my years teaching both in the public schools and as a corporate trainer.
And what about your work as a volunteer working with traumatized children? Does that contribute to your writing?
Well, my work as a court-appointed special advocate with Voice for Children back in Boulder created a basis for understanding the cycle of abuse and neglect and survival of these crimes against children. It was challenging to invent a way to describe how Jules, the young girl in The Belief in Angels, uses her dissociative behavior to survive. I needed to understand what was lost through her survival
right.
in order to tell her story. I had a personal experience with one of the kids that I worked with. The nature of that work is that once you're done with a case, you can have no further contact.
Oh.
And I didn't understand that fully. And of course, it was heartbreaking because I bonded mm-hmm. with all the kids that I was involved with over 15 years. And this kid in particular, I was working with for 3 years. And years later, I saw this kid, now a young adult, and reintroduce myself. They didn't remember me. They said they not only didn't remember me, they didn't remember the 3 years of the case. And I thought, that's fascinating. And ultimately, that was how they survived it.
It's an example of dissociation.
Exactly, like PTSD. And that sort of spurred the idea of Saja's story and, you know, how that relates to Jules' mm-hmm. story later. Saja survives Madonic death camp mm-hmm. by, in his head, exchanging the personality of a dead Russian POW.
So the traumas almost don't matter where they come from. When you're too taxed, you check out, is what you're really underscoring.
It's amazing. Our minds are beautiful instruments, really, you know, that they allow us to do this, to check out and survive a situation, and then sometimes check back in without any memory of what's happened.
And yet it's an optimistic book.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. That was important to me. It was important to show that you can come through these kinds of tragedies. And my kids that I worked with really proved that point. Come through and be resilient. And I never would have believed it before I worked with these kids, that you could survive some of the things that they've been through. Because with CASAs, you're really getting the worst of the worst. It's right. always the worst abuse and neglect cases. And
right.
Boulder County had a particularly high level of abuse for such a small community.
Now, we look forward to reading the book. It sounds like it's really a portrayal of hope.
Absolutely.
And you're very busy. You're a multi-talented multitasker. What is your writing routine and your greatest challenge in keeping the routine?
Definitely. I'm an ADHD profile. So what I have to do is I have to carve 2 days a week from civilian life to just stand up and write. I stand because I had a back injury a couple of years ago, and that's more helpful. I have my coffee at my desk by 7 in the morning. I stick to a maximum of 1 hour of internet business. I allow a maximum of 15 minutes of internet playing. I allow another half an hour to pretend I'm not really playing on the internet. I have to have at least 500 words on the page by 11, or I walk around the neighborhood. I study strangers. And if it all goes well, I don't stop writing. I don't answer the door. I don't answer my talking cat. I just sit and I write, and I lose time until the light fades.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. That was really interesting. One last question, Dylan. When exactly will The Belief in Angels become available, and where can readers find the book?
April 28th, which is Holocaust Remembrance Day. The book will be published and available. You can find it at your local bookstore and 17 different sites online. Also, if you would like to come to my first San Diego book reading and signing, I'll be at Eclipse Chocolate Bar and Bistro in South Park on May 17th, Saturday night at 7, reading from the book and sharing delicious chocolate and other goodies provided by the creative chefs at Eclipse.
Great. Thank you. That's all we have time for, but thank you for joining us, Dylan.
Thank you so much, Raina. Thanks for having me, and I hope you read my book.
Oh, we'll be happy to. If you would like more information about J. Dylan Yates, please visit her website at www.jdylanyates.com, and that's JDYLANYATES. Again, this is Raina Menashe, and you have been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Leon Thompson with our Green Scene Report. The county is taking steps to buy more land at Volcan Mountain near Julian for open space. The Board of Supervisors recently voted to hold a hearing on April 16th to consider buying 114 acres of land next to the Volcan Mountain Wilderness Preserve. The property is located north of Banner Road and east of Farmer Road in Julian. It is mostly forest land with some areas of chaparral and coastal sage scrub. So far, the county and other organizations have acquired more than 34,000 acres in this vicinity, with the idea of preserving the beauty and wildlife of this land for future generations. Funding is expected from two sources: a $115,000 grant from the California Habitat Conservation Fund and $205,000 from the Multiple Species Conservation Acquisitions Fund. Supervisor Diane Jacobs said, "The Volcan Mountain Preserve is probably one of the best, most pristine areas in our whole region."
If you need help with your taxes, the AARP Tax Aid Program can help. They're offering free tax preparation and e-filing for senior citizens, low-income residents, and others in need in the East County area. Tax sites will be open till April 15th. The AARP Tax Aid Program will be available at the following locations: the El Cajon Library, College Avenue Senior Center, Alpine Senior Center, La Mesa Adult Enrichment Center, and Edgemore Hospital. Two locations that have offered this service in the past, Lemon Grove Senior Center and the Salvation Army, will not be open this year. Past clients at these two sites are welcome to make an appointment at any of the other locations.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show: Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road.
We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment.
If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.